Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And they, well, this evening, for the first hour, they're going to be the views of Mr. Jim Guest, who is going to be talking about the real ID card, and he's a member of the legislature. Well, I'm going to let him tell you just a little bit about himself. We've had him on as a guest before, and always a very, very welcome guest here at Radio Liberty. Mr. Guest, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be on again and glad to share my message with the listeners around this country and around the world, wherever they're listening in tonight.
All right, fine. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. You are a legislature. Whereabouts?
I am a legislature in Missouri here. I live in northwest Missouri. I've got an engineering background, and I came back to the farm several years ago, and I'm a small businessman, starting some small businesses and other things. And about 6 years ago, I decided the opportunity was there for me to get into public service, so I ran as a state representative here in Missouri, and I've been elected to, three times now, and be running again for my fourth term next year. I've served on the Workforce Development Corrections Committees, and I've been chair of the Fiscal Review Committee here in Missouri for the last 2 years. As chairman of the Fiscal Review, any bill that comes through the state legislature that impacts the cost of it over $100,000 either way has to come from my committee for approval after it's had action on the floor. So I'm somewhat of a checks and balance there, and just have some influence on if I think our state is getting too extravagant in its spending. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about the RFID cards, because I think that this is something that people have to understand. There really are people who have a different worldview, and they want every person in this country numbered. Now, we were promised that our Social Security card number would never be used for anything but Social Security, and we only had to have that number because government loved us so much and wanted to give us money when we got old and couldn't work. But, of course, that was, like so many government promises, not true. They want every person numbered, and now they want everybody to eventually be forced to carry a card. They want to have RFID. Chips on every cow, and you see the cows now, they have these little green tags on their ears, but so many of them carry RFID, identification. What's this really all about, in your estimation?
I think you came very close to covering all of it. It's the goal of those in our government to track us. I probably started working on this 2 or 3 years ago when the Real ID Act was passed, part of H.R. 418 in our U.S. Congress. H.R. 418 was a bill to provide about $82 billion in supplemental war effort for soldiers, and also some charitable tsunami relief there. You know, two probably well-meaning things. So it was something that most members of Congress could not vote against.
But, of course, it had another little something on there.
Yes.
And, of course, that's
late one night in the House, they decided, I think, Senator James Sensenbrenner, a representative, added what was called the Real ID Act onto it.
All right, fine. So this is what they do, of course, so often to get to what they really want.
Mm-hmm. It was added there, and, without very little debate, it went over to the Senate side, and never even had a debate on the Senate. It was voted out without any opposition. And lo and behold, what seemed like a very harmless bill contained the Real ID Act, and that is where we really have some serious problems facing us in the future. The Department of Homeland Security said that starting in May of 2008, you got to have a real ID card if you want to get on the federally regulated airplane or enter any federal building or any nuclear power plant.
Well, now, I thought this was all about terrorism. This is about stopping terrorism.
Oh, yeah.
But certainly, are the terrorists going to have their RFID cards? Are all the terrorists going to abide by our laws? Or is this simply for the law-abiding citizens?
That's what it is. Why, if we're concerned about terrorists, are we putting this on the backs of the freedom-loving Americans? That is the fault in this. And actually, the National ID card, which is what it is, even though they say it's not, you know, they've been trying to get this passed for probably 30 years. In the Carter administration, they tried to get it implemented. In the Reagan administration, he outright told them it wasn't going to have it. And in the Clinton administration, they did kind of have an ID card attached to a bill, which was passed, but there was such a public outcry on it, it was taken out. So all they needed was a reason for it or an excuse, and when 9/11 happened, you know, the threat of terror or threat of another outbreak, they were able to slip it through at that point. And they say, well, we need to have a more secure driver's license, and to do that, you know, to stop terrorism, because the terrorist had some more than one driver's license. However, there's some fault in what they're saying there. The terrorists got their driver's license basically using a passport from some of the countries they came from. Those passports, which we accept, were stolen. So we have no way of controlling the authenticity or the accuracy of the passport when somebody from another country comes in. So that's where the policy comes in. They say they want to control terrorists. Well, let's target the terrorists, as you say. Let's not target those who are in this country, not causing any problems. I don't think the 80-year-old grandmother that gets on an airplane is much of a threat, at least not in Missouri.
Well, I don't think so in much of the country at all. But, of course, this is really a long-range plan, and it's so difficult, I think, for many Americans to believe that there really would be those out there who are not interested at all in fighting terrorism, but are more interested in controlling and numbering and watching and observing and tracking law-abiding citizens, especially those like yourself and myself, who understand that there is a plan to do away with our sovereignty and bring us under the control of this ruling elite. We're going to be back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jim Guest, who's a legislator in the state of Missouri, and he's been very concerned about this RFID card, this tracking card. They say it's just to be actually a driver's license is secured, and of course we know it's a right driver's license because it has an RFID chip in it, but and somehow by getting every American to have to carry one of these cards, we're going to defeat Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. And so by giving up our freedom and allowing us to be ourselves to be tracked, we're going to thwart the desires of the evil Osama bin Laden. So how do we counteract something like this? Because there's so many people who just blindly follow along whatever the government tells them, without ever stopping and questioning what's really going on.
I think part of it, as you say, you know, a lot of people, it's slowly being implemented in various ways without the people's knowledge of what's on there. You know, they say they want, they say, yeah, this card has to have what they call a common machine-readable technology. So that's a barcode on it, on the back. However, they've backed off strongly saying it's going to have an RFID chip initially. What people need to know is the Department of Homeland Security has told, there is no judicial, there is no legislative oversight on this. If this is not stopped, we're giving them a blank check to increase any requirements in the future on it. And you can be assured that there will be a requirement that it have an RFID chip in it. And when that chip is placed in it, then we found out a few states have some RFID chips already in their driver's license, that this enables the government to keep track of you. All these databases, the states have to keep a database on you when you go get your new card with all your information on it. And with this big link, all you have to do is link into your Social Security number, and you can download and get whatever information that's on you or anybody can. So that is where the problem comes in there, that we are becoming less secure instead of more secure. And the people think that with this real ID card that they will feel a little bit more secure. In essence, it's a false sense of security when this goes through.
And I think it's like with so many things. Initially, the American citizens invested literally hundreds of billions of dollars in defensive actions to protect us from the wicked communists, and we had to have these satellites that were to be up in space spying on the wicked communists. But now, of course, those same military satellites that have been used in the past to spy on the wicked communists are now being converted to civilian use so they can spy on the American people, not on the terrorists, because we don't care about terrorists. We haven't tried to seal our borders at all. Any effort to seal our borders has been effectively blocked, so we know that they're not really tracking the terrorists, but they are monitoring every American. In fact, they can even tell the quality of your roof. They can look at the shingles on your roof. The technology is that good, designed to spy on the Soviets, but now, of course, spying on the American people. Well, how are we going to convince the American people that they really have to be concerned about freedom, Jim? So many people take freedom for granted here without recognizing that our founding fathers feared government more than anything. They feared that the power of government would eventually one day be used against the people. How are we going to get people to understand the American dream is based upon limiting the power of the government so men could be free?
You're right on the target there. We're supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, not a government to be feared. It's the role of government to protect our freedoms, not to take them away, and certainly not by those who we elect and put in power to protect us. And do you know who is running our Department of Homeland Security on this real ID thing?
Oh, I don't know. Who is it?
We have 5 or 6 ex-KGB agents. Now, the KGB in Russia, were they working for the government, or were they working with the people? You know they were working for the government. They had people spying on each other. They had people carrying cards around so they could keep track of those. And that's exactly who we have over here. The right of assembly, the protection of our privacy and our personal papers, and that is what we're losing here. What protection do we have when the government can look into our bank accounts, monitor where we're going? That is what the Constitution was supposed to protect. I just kind of wonder what our forefathers would think if they were to come back and look at their country now. This is the country that, you know, they fought for. They put their lives and their whatever business they had on the line when they signed that Constitution. You know, they felt like freedom meant that much to them. Do the people in this country still value freedom that much? At least the people like you and I and others value the freedom enough that we're willing to fight for it. But we've got to get the rest of the people to realize the danger that's confronting us now.
Well, of course, the thing is, you're in the state legislature. Do you think that the average member of your legislature understands the American Constitution? Do you think that they can understand that the whole purpose of our federal government was to limit the power of government, and that was the function of the Bill of Rights? Are they aware that our founding fathers feared the power of government, or are they simply doing what's sort of expedient? You know, this sounds like a good idea, let's do it. After all, we've got to counter Osama bin Laden, because if we don't have everybody carrying one of these cards, Osama bin Laden's going to be able to take away our freedom.
Yep, the 10th Amendment says, and our forefathers was so intelligent, maybe they had some divine intervention there when they set that up. You know, it says that the federal government, it says the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states or to the people. The only power that the federal government has is what we give them, or what's not prohibited by them. And they have certainly overstepped that bounds I don't know how much they've overstepped it in the last few years. They have forgotten what the Constitution is. I think we need to make sure at the beginning of each session in every state and at the U.S., at the Washington, D.C., that they read through that Constitution at the beginning of the session so they understand what they're supposed to be governing by.
Well, I certainly think so. But the thing is that certainly every state legislator, when he is sworn in, has to swear to uphold the Constitution, and not only of the state, but of the federal government, and defend that Constitution of the United States against enemies both foreign and domestic. And nobody ever asks who those domestic enemies are, but I would like to suggest they're the people who want to change our form of government and have a different world view. And unfortunately, the average individual finds it so difficult to believe that there would be people here in the United States who don't believe in freedom, whose loyalty is to this globalist idea, this globalist concept of a ruling elite, because us common people are just too stupid to know what's best for it.
Yep, I say our country and its citizens are under attack. But this time it's not from outside, but it's from within our borders, you know. I think as Americans we're having our rights and freedoms stripped away from us at an alarming rate. And that's, under this administration, and as I said earlier, this almost a KGB-style Homeland Security. We must protect our country on our shoulders from those who would want to destroy our way of life. And, we are the people of a great nation if we protect the liberty by which it was founded. But then I think, as you mentioned earlier, the dangers our founding fathers worried about was our complacent nature when we become prosperous, when we take for granted that these freedoms are always going to be here. So,
amen. All the eggs are born on, hatched on one day, and they can all be put under the same number. But if you're a small chicken farmer with a few hundred chickens and they hatch on different days, you have to have a separate RFID number and chip on those. I don't even know how you're going to be able to band all your chickens with different RFID tags. And certainly we know that they're already forcing the farmers to have their RFID on their cattle. And they even want the farmer to have to report if that cow is moved from one field to another. They want to know where all the cows in America are. How in heaven's name are they ever going to track all the cows? I mean, they can't even track the money that
billions of dollars
they send to Iraq.
There are some farmers throughout this country that are just outraged at the thought of this. You know, my position on this is if you want to put chips in your animals, if it's market-driven, you should be free to do that. You know, it should be market-driven for you to do that, to identify your animal. But you should not be forced to do this by our federal government. And that's certainly where we differ on this.
Yeah, of course, this is going to be prohibitively expensive for the small farmer, but then there's some very large farmers who don't like the competition. What a wonderful thing to do, to use the federal government to get rid of your competition by making impossible demands on them that you don't have to abide by yourself. Well, Jim, so how are we going to reach the legislators? Because certainly one of the most important things is to get the state legislators to understand. And what are they doing in your state? Are the people in your state going to go along with the RFID, or have they taken a stand against it?
Oh, yeah, let's go on to that. You know, there's people who told me that I could not oppose the federal government on this issue. But, you know, they're wrong. I'm getting other states to tell the federal government that no one is issued. I formed a coalition of states. It's called LORI, Legislators Against Real ID. And here in Missouri, I've got legislation filed for Missouri to oppose this, and I've sent this model legislation to other states. And to date, we have 8 states who have rejected the real ID, where they've actually changed their state laws to say they will not go along with it. And we've probably got another 20 other states who have passed resolutions. Resolutions are not binding, but they sent it to their federal elected officials saying that they want to go on record as opposing it.
But of course, the federal government is saying you can't oppose this. We're in charge here, and it's saying you're just not going to be able to get on a plane. You're not going to be able to travel. You know, you're going to have a passport. You want to get into a federal building. If you don't, we're going to punish you if you don't go along with our program, because we're here to protect you from the wicked Osama bin Laden, who's hiding over there in the cave in Pakistan.
Yep, that's, is that the way it's supposed to be? Is that we, the people, have to take back our country? Anyway, we are making progress in this. I think telling the federal government that they've overstepped their bounds, that, this is not a national security issue. it's a control issue that they're putting upon us. So I'm continuing to work. I think next year we'll get more states to change their laws to say that they will not go along with this. And hopefully, in their wisdom, that the federal government will vote and will repeal this Real ID Act and put in some sensible legislation to close our borders and start tracking those who come into our country who we think are terrorists, or at least put up some kind of a mechanism to screen those who we think are potential threats when they come into this country. You know, as long as, until we close our borders, it makes no sense to start continuing to track and identify those within this country. I just do not, in fact, there is no wisdom in it. It's just the idea that someone wants to control this. They want to know where we are. They want to know our business now and in the future.
Well, you know, the crucial thing is that it should be very obvious that the current administration has no interest in stopping a terrorist from coming across our southern border. In fact, you know, Congress had voted for a fence that was 700 or 800 miles long, and they appropriated the money for it, and of course the instructions were given it was to be completed by about a year from now. And you know, the Bush administration has done everything they could to block the construction of that fence that was authorized by the state legislature. Are they free to? I thought the executive's purpose was to carry out the desire of the legislature, the federal legislature, not to certainly have their own independent policy, independent of the wishes of the people.
That's what is happening. You know, we're getting so many executive orders issued to bypass the Congress, bypass the will of the people, and set policy out there. And that is wrong. You know, we've got this North American Union coming along, and for those who don't know what it is, the North American Union is a plan to form Mexico and Canada in with the United States into one union.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jim Guest is our guest for this hour. And he was just simply saying that there in Missouri, where he's in the legislature, he actually had gotten the state of Missouri to go ahead and vote to say, we're not going to go along with the RFID Act as far as individuals, the identification card for people. And then, of course, she's got a number of other state legislatures do exactly the same thing, and even a much larger number of state legislatures to pass non-binding resolutions opposing this whole idea. So how many other states have joined Missouri in saying, we're not going to go along with this federal program? How many other states have passed a non-binding resolution supporting your position?
I think we have 8 states right now that have passed, you might say, binding laws in their state that say they refuse to go along with it. You know, in essence, that says, you know, if the federal government says you can't get on an airplane if you don't have the real ID, then are these airlines going to avoid those 8 states? I don't think so. We may have a showdown come that point to see whether the federal government can control the airline industry or not. And then, like I said, this other 20 states who have probably passed resolutions, I think some more of those will come back next year and pass laws to change theirs to actually make it binding. Next year is an election year. I think it's very important for those people out there who want to protect their freedom. They ask those congressmen and senators where they stand on the freedom issue. Are they going to protect the freedom of the people in that state? Or are they going to side with the government and require you to have a real ID so you can be tracked? And that can be a very important or very persuasive issue in an election year.
And I really think this is really so true. I think that anybody with half an ounce of intelligence has to realize that the federal government really doesn't believe in a war on terrorism. If they believed in a war on terrorism, they certainly would have sealed our southern border. If they really believed in a war on terrorism, why they would have gone ahead and built the fence was authorized last year and was supposed to be completed a year from now. 700 or 800 miles of the fence is to be built along the 2,000-mile border. But Of course, they've even refused to only, they've built about 3 miles, and there's no way they're going to get the rest of this done. So obviously they have no intention of trying to block the terrorists. They're using the threat of terrorism to justify a police state controls on the American people. That's what it's really all about. I mean, if they were really concerned about Osama bin Laden, they would have pursued him on into Pakistan and captured him. If they really were concerned about Osama bin Laden, they would have captured him when they had him holed up in the Torbau Mountains instead of letting him escape and refusing to allow the American troops who were there to actually try to catch him. So nothing as it appears to be, and certainly if they were concerned about Osama bin Laden, then why did they forget, stop trying to catch him and actually then go to war with Iraq? Was that what it was really all about to begin with? And certainly was Osama bin Laden just a good excuse to justify that? Let me just read you very briefly from page 180 of the book called, written by Tom Keene and Lee Hamilton, and it dealt with what was the 9/11 Commission report. And this is a fascinating book. It's called Without Precedent, and here's why, simply what it says. Condoleezza Rice was asked by one of the members of the 9/11 Commission, I quote, why the Bush administration had not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001, and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat of reporting over the spring and summer of that year. And Condoleezza Rice responded and pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take drastic action against Al-Qaeda before 9/11, either abroad or in reforming government at home, and said, and I quote Condoleezza Rice, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, then you don't get that kind of change. Let me repeat that. Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, that you don't get that kind of change. In other words, we weren't going to change the American people's attitude about freedom until there was a major event. And boy, there sure was a major event. They didn't try to stop it. That comes from page 180 of Without Precedent, and you'll actually find the testimony in the 9/11 Commission report. Read it, understand, ladies and gentlemen, that they specifically did not try to stop the attack because they wanted to change our attitude. Well, Jim, you can't be very popular there in Washington, D.C., or with the Office of Homeland Security when you were standing in defiance of the elite who really want to control the population.
You know, that's right. I've heard that I'm not very popular going against what the bureaucracy wants to do. But, you know, once I think about this, and I thought, you know, I don't want to sit on my steps with my grandchildren and say, you know, I can remember back when America used to be free. I don't want to do that. I want to keep this country free, and I hope that our forefathers would look down and say, you know, I'm proud of what you're doing. That's what we did when we established the freedom and the Constitution, the Bill of Rights in this country. That's what it's about. And I think we've got many people out there who will join us in this. And if they want to learn more about this, we have a website. It's Legislators Against Real ID. It's www.legislatorsagainstrealid.com, or they can Google l.a.r.i. real ID, and it will come up, and that will give them some more information on it.
Oh, could they just actually Google in your name, Jim?
Yes. I've got so many articles out there on me that will probably bring it up. And also, you know, my travel around the country, and I'm doing this on my own dime, and I've had a lot of people who want to, you know, contribute a few dollars to help me. And I've got a committee set up to do that. It's a Committee for America's Freedom, Box 601, King City, Missouri, 64463. And I get donations all over the country. I got some small check today from Texas. I get several from California. You just name it. People that hear me on this program and others, you know, want to help. You know, I can. It doesn't make any difference to the size of the donation. It can be a small amount or it can be a large amount, and just all it does is goes to pay for my travel. I went back to Williamsburg, Virginia, and spoke to the 16 southern states at their legislative conference, and there were several legislators that wanted a copy of the model legislation there. I went to Michigan to speak to the Midwest Legislative Conference a couple weeks ago, and there were several states that you know, some of them had kind of heard about it, but they didn't realize the full implications of it, so they want copies of it to hopefully they can implement in their legislation next year. So it takes some work. We've got a lot of legislators around the country who have joined forces with me to work on this. But then, as you said earlier, yes, it's not very popular when you go against a program that somebody has set up in D.C. to take away.
Now, hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Jim Guest is our guest. And certainly, if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Would love to hear from you. I'm sure Mr. Guest would be glad to answer your questions. Now, Mr. Guest, of course, is actually his website's out there. He does all this on his own. If you'd like to help him and like to contribute towards his travel, because, of course, he's spending a great deal of his time traveling and talking to legislators from other states and developing this, certainly this groundswell of opposition in state legislatures to this idea that we will each have to have our own little card so that we can be tracked, so that we can thwart the efforts of Osama bin Laden, who wants to take away our freedom. And Jim, I'd like you to go ahead and get your web page out again, would you?
Okay. It's Legislators Against Real ID.
Legislators Against Real ID.
Laurie, L-A-R-I, you know. And, well, like I said, you can Google in my name, and I'm pretty sure it'll bring it up and several other things that I've been working on there. And that website does have, you can link on to this Committee for America's Freedom. I'll give that again. Committee for America's Freedom, Box 601, King City, Missouri, 64463. Today I got a check, and it was made out to Laurie, Box 601. That is fine. They all go to help me in my travels out there and to continue to work with us. But we want the people to fully understand, unless the states ask for an extension, you will have to go into your local Department of Revenue to get a new ID, and you will not get that in a few minutes. It's going to take you many trips, and they are going to make copies of all the data that you bring in there. They're going to copy your birth certificate, your Social Security number, where you live. They're going to put that in a data file, in a database in that state. Everybody in any state can link onto that. This has to be shared with all other states. The Department of Homeland Security, in their wisdom, thinks we need to share this globally. That means some foreign country can link into our database. This can be the country where these terrorists are coming from. So you tell me whether somebody in D.C. is looking out for our security or whether they want to have control over us. The answer is pretty obvious.
I really think it's so funny. You know, I went to the doctor today for something just minor, but one of the things you have to do is you have to sign this special form that says, understand that they have a privacy policy dedicated to protecting our policy. And I've read the privacy policy, and I know that they're trying to protect my privacy so other people won't know what's going on about my personal matters having to do with health. And then if you sit down and you read the privacy policy, what it is that they can release the information on you to just about anyone they want to, and anybody who wants that information, has nothing to do with protecting your policy. It has to do with taking away your privacy. You see, they have to use words to conceal what they're really up to, and they want the information on your health. They want to know what books you read, and that's why they're checking the various libraries to see what books people are reading. But of course, the librarian can't tell you they're checking out. If you do anything at your bank, you cast a large check, or you put a large amount of money in the bank, they have to report that to the government. Yeah. All of these things are on your permanent record. They have massive data files on all the law-abiding citizens. They're not tracking the terrorists, ladies and gentlemen. They're tracking the law-abiding citizens, and they're setting up these files. And not just that the FBI, the military has their files on you, the Office of Homeland Security has their files, and then they merge them all together so that they know everything about you. And we have a wonderful four-tape set on what happened in China as the communists took in, and how they were monitoring the people. We're talking about back in the 40s, and this one missionary was there. They knew the number of shirts he had in his drawer, the number of handkerchiefs he had in his bedroom, the number of pairs of socks he had. They were monitoring everything about him before they took over. And if you've never heard our four-tape set on China, you really need to take that to understand. Fast forward now, really, 60 years to where we are today, and there are people who are collecting similar files on us. And if you have a grocery cart and you buy groceries, they're keeping track of what you buy at the grocery store. You buy things with a credit card. All those files are kept. They have gigantic dossiers on the American citizens, and you have to ask yourself, why? If you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question or comment, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Jack, do you have a question?
Indeed. I wanted to know if the guest is aware of what Alex Jones has said. That's the first question.
No, what has Alex Jones said?
Well, what he said is numerous cities and towns have passed their own local ordinances prohibiting the Patriot Act.
Well, no, this isn't the Patriot Act, this is simply RFID.
Right, I'm just thinking, Dr. Stan, that perhaps locally the people at the grassroots can force a mandate banning the real ID and all this other...
Let's see what Jim is doing, because he's working the state legislatures, and that covers a lot more people. What about the local communities passing resolutions?
Jim,
let him reply, please. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not aware of that. I think the biggest impact is when each state changes their state law to say, we will not go along with the Real ID Act. In Missouri, I want to pass a law that says the state cannot sell your personal information from your driver's license application or your tax returns. You mentioned the Patriot Act. Part of my 5 points to America's freedom is we need to... Repeal the Patriot Act, or as I call it, the Unpatriot Act, which allows your federal government to spy on your phone records, your bank accounts, and what have you. I guess you can get something done at the local level, but I think you'd be much better if you do it at the state level to cover everything you have to do, whether you can supersede state law or not.
And I think really what's so interesting, of course, is that the federal government wanted your picture, and what they did, they went around to the states, and they actually paid the states, and they bought copies of the pictures off of all the driver's license, but they lied about it. They had to say, they said it was private companies that were doing this for credit card security, and it simply wasn't that case at all. They didn't want the American people to know that they want your picture. And, of course, they want to put that in the database so that we can, when they punch in your name, your picture will come up as well. Did you have another question, Jack?
Real quick, Dr. Stan, thank you for that. I'm going to start getting on the phone with the legislators tomorrow. Are
you in California?
No, he's in Michigan.
Michigan. Oh, okay.
And I was going to ask about the KGB fellas. I remember Mikhail Gorbachev, that Nobel Peace Prize winner, supervised U.S. base closures in the early 90s. Where have you interviewed the source, or where is the source that can be verified of the KGB agents that are directing? As Jeannie last night said, Homeland Security is
is the Nazi SS.
Okay, fine. Right. Thanks so much, Jack. And let's go ahead. And certainly, Jack just did mention that Gorbachev had been consulted when we were closing our military bases. If anybody would like to verify that, why, of course, we have the information and the articles about it. Why would we actually have Mikhail Gorbachev be involved with the closing of our military bases? That just doesn't make sense. And of course, Jack is wondering about the KGB agents who are working in Washington, D.C. Is this reported in any of the major media, Jim?
That's true. Back to the original question, I got one news article about, I think his name was Primakov, I'm not sure.
Right, uh-huh.
That was one of the top KGB agents that's working at Department of Homeland Security.
Now, he was, I know he's back in Moscow at the present time.
Oh,
I don't know whether he's ever over here, but certainly he may very well have been. I've heard the same stories. I've just never been actually able to verify it. But, you know, nothing would surprise me.
You know, that is, when they get people who have done that, and so... he said he's from Michigan, Paul Opsalmer. I've been working with him very closely in Michigan to try and do that. I want to go a little bit farther than what Representative Opsalmer is. His wants to get back where the states can at least sit down at the table and negotiate with the federal government on what kind of a security we have here. I'd rather just outright ban the real ID and then start to sit down so the states have.
Well, Joe, I think what you're really doing is really wonderful, and it's very courageous of you, and I'm just so glad that you're out there doing this. I'd heard that other states, a number of states, had said we're not going to go along with the program. Okay, of course, he's been supposedly on dialysis all this time. I'm not quite sure how you manage dialysis, hiding in a cave in Pakistan. I mean, it's a very, very sophisticated process. Being a physician, I can tell you that, I mean, you don't just sit down and just have your little dialysis. You have to be in a hospital doing it. In fact, you know, there are a lot of reports that Osama bin Laden's been dead for a long time, but we sure need somebody to be afraid of, so I guess he's as good as anybody. But what they're really doing is playing on the fears of the American people. Do you ever have that feeling, Jim, that they're exploiting us, that they want us to be fearful so that we will knuckle under and do exactly as we're told?
I was just thinking that as you were talking, I said, you know, why it's so difficult to catch Osama bin Laden. As long as he's loose, he's a threat. And people can fear him or any other terrorist attack on this nation. So as long as they can get the people to live in fear, it's easier to pass more laws or take action to control them, to know where they are, take away their freedom, invade their privacy. You're exactly right. You know, that's kind of what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, those people lived in fear there, and that was how that Hitler was able to gain control of them.
Well,
and there's a kind of parallel that's going on here right now.
Well, you know, the one advantage we have they didn't have in Nazi Germany is we got the Internet. So if you're out there in the listening audience, and I want you to go up on the Internet after the program is over tomorrow, and I want you to Google in Osama bin Laden died. And you'll find literally hundreds of hits on Osama. In fact, that Osama bin Laden and many reliable sources that say he's been dead for some years, but we can't let the American people know that. The other thing is, of course, go to the FBI website, 10 Most Wanted Men, and notice what the FBI says about Osama bin Laden. They never even mention in the most wanted poster where they're offering a $5 million reward for his capture. They never once mentioned 9/11. My goodness, the government says he was responsible for 9/11, but I guess they never told the FBI. But go up and check it out on the Internet, ladies and gentlemen, and then go ahead and check out Jim Guest. Jim is our guest tonight, so remember, Jim Guest from Missouri. And the legislation that he has certainly model legislation there that's being passed. And get hold of your legislators, and if you can help Jim in your state, if your state hasn't already passed legislation, you know, certainly coming out against this identification card. Here's something that you can do, because I would like to suggest that we're not going to stop Osama bin Laden from taking away our freedom, because, you know, the reason that Osama bin Laden attacked us is because we were free. And so we're not going to stop Osama bin Laden from taking away our freedom. by taking away our freedom and requiring everybody to carry an identification card. And I wonder how many people out there really think that the terrorists are going to carry their identification card. So,
I would say, you know, it's difficult to get these terrorists to stop us at the border when they come in so we can get their picture and give them a card. You know, terrorists and criminals don't abide by the laws. So if they think they're going to pass a law to require everybody to get a real ID card, you know, they're not going to do it. Some people say, well, I'd feel a bit more secure if I was on an airplane with a real ID card in my pocket. I said, yeah, the person sitting next to you is going to have a fake real ID card in his pocket if that makes you feel any better.
Now, if I was on the plane, I would like to know that there was an air marshal on that plane to protect me. But you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that the government is so concerned about airline safety that there's probably less than one air marshal in every 10 flights, probably far less than that. If the government was really concerned about our safety on the planes, they would have deflectors on those planes in case there was a surface-to-air missile fired at it. I can assure you that they have these deflectors on Air Force One to protect the president, but none of our commercial airliners have them. Israel has them on their planes because they want to protect their people from terrorism, but we don't put them on our planes because it's just, well, it's just too expensive.
You know, I always wonder, people say, why do you think you have to have a driver's license to be a terrorist? You can walk into a building with a briefcase and set a bomb, leave a bomb there. You can strap one to you. You can even drive a car without a driver's license. So to think that you're going to stop terrorism by requiring people to have a real ID, you know, that's not going to work. They can do that even without it, or very easily will they be able to make fake IDs. These crooks and counterfeiters are very good at it. It would take just, in fact, they've already said that it would take them a very short time to start selling counterfeit real ID bills. You talk about your trying to protect your identity. You know, all you have to do is about every day you find out somebody's security has been breached. It was only about a month ago that the state of Ohio lost a hard drive of all 64,000 state employees. That hard drive was lost with their bank data on it, their payroll data, their Social Security, and everything. You know, the Department of Homeland Security, their own transportation department, lost some data on over 100,000 of their employees here about a year ago. So before we even start putting all this data in our database in our state, we've already got it's difficult to protect it. So how in the world do you think that the employees in each state are going to protect your personal data when it's downloaded in there?
In fact, the Department of Veterans Affairs, apparently they lost all of the records on all of the veterans here.
Yes.
In fact, we got letters from the government saying somebody has stolen the records of from the Veterans Administration with your name and Social Security number and all your personal data on it. We want you to know they've stolen it. Now, why would they be that incompetent unintentionally? Or are they trying to frighten us that we need the government to put, because somebody's trying to steal our identity? That's why we have to have a real ID card and with a chip in it, and maybe the next best thing will be simply to have everybody have a chip. So those terrorists won't be able to buy or sell unless they have the chip in their hand or maybe on their forehead. Ladies and gentlemen, what we're seeing is the most incredible scam of all time. And so many people are going along with it. Our guest has been Jim Guest, who's a very courageous man, taking a very courageous stand today. Well, Jim, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, very good. I would, so more people can, you know, if they can't get all this information down, if they can go online and, like I said, Google in Jim Guest, Google in Laurie, L-A-R-I, space, real ID, they can bring up some information, and I can certainly use some support if they want to send a contribution to the Committee for America's Freedom, or they can just make it out to Laurie, Box 601, King City, Missouri, 64463. But I want everybody out there that's listening to know that the freedom for your future and your children and the generations to come is really on the line. You've got to take this seriously here, what our federal government has planned for us and what they're implementing. It's not too late. Like our forefathers, they fought and stood up for the freedom of this country, and we can do the same thing. call your state legislator or U.S. legislator. Ask them where they stand on them and ask them why they are not protecting your freedom and not making their voices heard. You know, united we can stand on this thing and we can defeat it. We know that our voices can be heard when enough people speak out, and now is the time to do that. So it's I wouldn't say it's an uphill battle. We're making some good inroads on it. But when you're going against the federal government, they can bring pressures to bear on you and some people that's helping you. But then this is a battle that we cannot afford to lose. If you like the freedom you have now, then you'd better work to protect it.
Well, have you had any opposition? I mean, any people putting pressures on you?
Oh, indirect. I've had some pressures put on me and some of my staff members here that sort of make it difficult for us to get our job done, or some indirect threats. But then, the quest for freedom is strong enough that we're going to continue to battle forward.
Well, I certainly respect you for what you're doing, Jim, and certainly any time why you'd like to be on our programs, and I will call your secretary and try to get you on to our other programs. I think your message is important, and it's important to realize the effect that one person can have. One person with a vision, one person with virtue and honesty and courage. So I applaud your efforts, and certainly we need more legislators like you who are not there because, this is a way of getting power. They're there because they believe in this elusive concept of freedom under God, because without freedom, my life has very little meaning. God bless you. Thanks for everything you're doing, Jim.
Okay, thank you.
Good night. God
Good
bless.
Night.
All right. I hope you enjoyed our program with Jim Guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I think that Jim is a very, very courageous individual. He's a legislator in the state of Missouri, and of course he is trying to get people to understand that this whole thing is a scam that's been planned a long time. They've always wanted, of course, to have everybody numbered, everybody having a card, and one day, of course, they want to get everybody chipped. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people, and they justify what they're doing into protecting us against the wicked Osama bin Laden. So, certainly we have an excellent book. It's called Spy Chips, and we have a number of fascinating interviews with Catherine Albrecht and Liz McIntyre and several other people, actually, on these ideas for animals. They want to get the animals checked, chipped. They want to get the people chipped. They want to get a chip in your passport. They want a chip in your driver's license. They want to know everything about you. They're collecting dossiers. And if you have any question in collecting dossiers, the book, it's entitled Fixing Intelligence by Major General William Odom, who headed NSA, the most secret of all of our spy agencies. And, of course, in his book, written in 2003, he could not tell us what was going on, but he could ask questions like, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA have people planted in the media, journalists? Should the CIA and the Army be keeping dossiers on American citizens? Do you think they should? Well, we hope many of you out there want to get the books by check. You can certainly specifically order the tapes that we have with Catherine Albrecht and other tapes on certainly on the chipping of the animals. You can get a copy of this program. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But how do we really understand what's going on? Well, we understand really by understanding that there really are secret societies out there. In fact, a woman once said that an understanding of the forces that have shaped the events of the 20th century is predicated not upon facts to be learned, but rather upon secrets to be discovered. And that's why my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, the book or the DVD, my talk on the Forbidden Secret, our four tapes or four CD set on the secret, behind the secret, the award-winning DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and Riddles in Stone, and The Atlantis Connection, and The Emergence. All of these DVDs are so vitally important, because you're not going to hear these things elsewhere. Nobody's going to take you into the history of this movement towards the world government. They're going to tell you there's a movement towards world government, but they will never tell you what energizes the people behind this. And, of course, this is long-range planning of thousands of years. And it's all coming to pass right now. We do carry one book written by a Satanist named Manly P. Hall. It's called The Secret Destiny of America. It is actually not listed in our catalog. You'll have to request it specifically. The Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall. We carry his other book, The Secret Teachings of All Ages. We do not list them on our catalog because we don't want you to think we endorse what he says. But if you're a researcher and you really want to understand what energizes the people who are intent upon destroying our freedom and bringing about the world government, then The Secret Destiny of America. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in a battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and we do hope that that many of you will check to try to prove us wrong, and if you cannot prove us wrong, that you'll join us in this epic struggle, a struggle for the very souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about some of the videos she's made. We're going to be talking about the spreading of belief in witchcraft and the supernatural among our young, and even increasing belief in the supernatural among many of the adults in this country. And there is a growing fascination with this idea of being able to find the real power, the hidden power, that is hidden within each one of us. And it is that old adage that began in the Garden of Eden. When the serpent said to Eve, "And ye shall be as gods." And this has been the message down to the eons, that man has... Carol, thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It is always such a wonderful privilege to be with you.
Well, tell us what you're seeing today, because things are moving very, very fast as these ideas are being spread in our children and even in our adults.
Ah, it is just incredible how quickly things are moving. You're absolutely right. About 20 years ago, I made a film called Gods of the New Age, and I wrote a book of the same title. And just watching in the past two decades the change of Eastern mysticism, Hinduism, yoga, the way that yoga is now being taught in schools. It is just incredible. I am on the verge of finishing a film on yoga, and in fact, this very week I'm concluding it, and you are going to get one of the first copies, which I am very excited to tell you about. But, you know, just the incredible thing of how yoga has now completely appeared to be, is marketed as though it isn't a Hindu, Eastern mystical practice.
But isn't this really very similar to what we're actually taking up in so many of our Christian churches today in the name of contemplative prayer, where you sort of put yourself into this, in this state of almost this, a state of, almost like a state that you'd have with yoga?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. It's crossed into markets. It's gone across from secular thinking into our Christian institutions and organizations, and in fact this is what my latest film is about, how it has come into the church, how it is presenting itself in the church, how we are opening ourselves up to the spiritual realm out there without even calling it a spiritual realm in some cases. I mean, it's just amazing. 20 years, 30 years ago, it was so obvious that Eastern mysticism, that yoga came from Hinduism. It was so obvious it came from India. But then it started getting packaged as a scientific program, as though it was somehow scientifically proved that it was able to bring about a fitness. It was able to...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. You go right ahead and pick your thought up there, Carol.
I was just mentioning that the way that yoga became repackaged, as though they could take away the spiritual aspects of it, as though it could be scientifically monitored somehow, that the sort of spiritual connection that one opened oneself up to could be monitored in a scientific way and, presented as... scientifically showing improvement. For instance, just recently in 2003, I believe it was, there were researchers at California State University that studied these TEP scores at the Accelerated School District, and particularly focused in on this new yoga that is being taught to children in schools, 100 schools across 26 states. They've adopted this Goobers yoga educational program, and more than 300 physical education instructors have been trained in it. So here we had the researchers of the California State University looking into how the students were performing. And so scientifically they have found a correlation between the kids that take yoga, that they've got better behavior, better grades. And they said these young kids that have been taking these programs are much more fit than the district average, in the physical fitness thing. So they take these tests, they show that they're scientifically supposedly accelerated and being able to perform better, and they're not seeing that here in schools where they've taken out the Bible, they've taken out prayer, they've taken out Christian foundational anything that is associated with a Christian worldview, and yet they're bringing in Eastern mysticism completely connected with yoga, Hinduism. All of that is part of this Eastern mystical worldview, and this is now being brought into school where they say that they can empty, that they can separate the physical from the spiritual. So it's absolutely amazing that this has grown. I mean, at a time when we've got Harry Potter being coming into the schools, where the Bible's being taken out, Harry Potter's been allowed to be read aloud in the classrooms, and here we've got witchcraft brought in a child-friendly way to our young students, teaching them all about this young wizard learning wizardry.
Hold that thought there for just a moment, Carol. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is Carol Matrician, and we're talking about yoga that is coming into our schools, which is basically a form of Eastern mysticism. Could you explain to our listeners who really don't understand yoga what this is, how it works, and why it is so deadly dangerous?
Well, Dr. Stan, as you said earlier in your program, I was born and raised in India, and I was fifth generation born in India, and very, very familiar with Eastern mysticism and Hinduism. And in India, yoga and Hinduism are synonymous. The practice of yoga is something that is done by most Hindus in the last stage of their life when they're preparing to go into their next into the next phase of life in their reincarnation cycle. So the Indian, the Hindu believes that their body goes from body to body, so that when they die out of this one body, their soul goes into another body and another body and so on. And depending on what they've accomplished or done in past lives determines how they will come back in future lives. So yoga is a very, very important part of preparing them for death, preparing them for reincarnation, helping them to change their mind through mind exercises, even though they're also physical exercises, but the physical exercises are connected with deities. Every body posture is connected with a deity, the name of an animal that the body gets into in order to be able to become one with the universe, become one with the idea. The Hindu idea of deity is that all nature is divine, if you will. So the problem with man is he doesn't understand his divinity, and he doesn't understand that he's one with the cosmic consciousness. And so yoga is part of changing his consciousness, changing his mind to become one and become united with the sort of higher consciousness, this divinity, before he gives up this body in order to be prepared to bring his soul into the next body.
Well, Carol, this state of mind that is being stressed, this almost altered state of consciousness, do you think this opens one up to demonic possession?
It's certainly, if one comes from a biblical worldview, we would understand it, because the Bible explains that we have to love the Lord our God with all our mind. We have to bring our mind under the mind of Christ. We have to have God's opinion. So from a biblical point of view, we're told not to give up our minds, not to put our minds into neutral, so to speak, because it would open up a doorway for our minds to be taken over by another being. Now, within Hinduism, they don't see that. That is not what they would see in a negative way. They believe that every single energy out there, every single sort of force, if you will, is part of divinity. So, yes, from a biblical viewpoint, of course we would say that it's supernaturally dangerous and something that we mustn't get involved in. From an Eastern perspective, they say you must get involved in that in order to understand the energy that you have inside of yourself that has to be awakened. In fact, even more incredible, it's only in the Bible that the serpent is seen as the enemy of God. But in every other culture, the serpent is believed to be a divinity of wisdom, an energy of wisdom. And actually, within yoga practice, this cobra, this serpent, this energy is called Kundalini. And it is believed to lay dormant at the base of each person's spine and must be awakened through yoga. The serpent power is awakened, brought up through the chakras or psychic energies that are believed to be along the spine, and ultimately to come up to the very top psychic energy, which is called the third eye, between the two eyes up in the forehead. And then this will ultimately open the yoga practitioner up through a mind-altering experience to the understanding that they are divine and part of divinity and can be united with cosmic consciousness or the Hindu god, which is an impersonal force. So it is unbelievable that these two completely opposing worldviews are not, it's not called a worldview when this yoga practice is brought into schools and being practiced now in hundreds of schools across America. The young children, the teacher, Gerber, that put this thing together, specifically worked on taking out everything that appeared to be spiritual. She very, very specifically engineered this. She, she's been a yoga practitioner since, for many, many years. And she wanted to bring yoga into public schools, but there was this absolute outcry that it was religious, and so she put together this program to take out, supposedly take out all these sort of Sanskrit, Eastern Hindu concepts, and she called them completely different things. So she called breathing, which is an important part of yoga, to stimulate an altered state of consciousness, she started calling it bunny breathing for her little children. And all these different terms, meditation, she didn't call it meditation, she called it time in. So she changed the names of these practices, stripped every piece of anything that could vaguely be construed as spiritual or Eastern, come from its Eastern worldview, its Eastern base, and she was able to bring it into schools. And in fact, the government pays grant money to bring this, to bring these teachers. The federal government gives grants to gym teachers who complete a teacher training course in yoga. And so, hence, we've now got this thing in with kids who we would never, that would never be...
We'll actually tap into this other dimension. Now, certainly our students, when they're putting themselves in this altered state of consciousness, do not understand that there is another dimension, and there really are spiritual forces there that would love to claim their soul. Sounds pretty absurd, but would you agree that this is the real danger for the people who put their minds into this altered state of consciousness, that they're opening themselves up to be possessed?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, you know, even the Hindus, even strong Hindus, will absolutely admit that yoga is part of their religion. It's part of the sacred teachings and practices of their religion. And while they wouldn't agree that this is negative, the way that Bible-believing Christians would understand that that there are dangers, the Orthodox Hindu will admit that it is a religious practice. But Dr. Stan, I think the difficulties are that people don't believe that Satan is real. They don't believe that he is a person. Somehow they've relegated Satan to this force, this impersonal force, just the way that they've relegated God to being an impersonal force. So when you don't have a personal attribute given to Satan, then it just sort of becomes this, it's just not even explained in a way. For instance, even in the Harry Potter books, where Harry Potter's got this energy, which is explained as the white side of his enemy, the evil Lord Voldemort, who has the dark side. So once we start calling this force the light side and the dark side, and not giving it a personal characteristic, then it all sort of becomes rather nebulous and doesn't appear to be dangerous. But from a biblical viewpoint and a biblical understanding, God thought so seriously about this, the personality of the fallen angels. In fact, I think the thing is that many people just don't know enough about angels and the spiritual world. And when I made the movie Supernatural Powers, the battle between good and evil, in fact, I don't know if you know that it got the best documentary for 2006, for last year.
I really didn't, but we do carry the video. In fact, I was noticing we had copies of it the other day. That's the Supernatural.
I was just thrilled when it was given the best documentary of 2006, but in that we explained that God created all the angels, and that the angels had free will to follow God or not, just as man was created in the image and likeness of God and was given free will, and that there were a third of the angels that chose not to follow God. And these are the fallen angels of the demonic spirits that are longing to have a physical body to come into. So they will come and lie and cheat and try and open the minds of whoever will accept them into, whoever's mind will be opened enough so that these beings can work and communicate through a physical body.
Well, you know, the big problem is, Carol, that our ministers are not teaching this. In fact, they haven't been taught it in their school. And many of them don't even believe in hell or the Satan, or the demonic spirits, or the spiritual battle that's taking place. So how can they teach their parishioners? Well, Carol, you go right ahead with the story, and certainly I was just commenting, one of the big problems we have today is that we have so many Christians who are spiritually illiterate. Their mind have been filled with all sorts of things and doctrines, but they don't understand the very foundation of Christendom and the spiritual battle that began in the Garden of Eden and is coming to its culmination today. And so pick the story up from there.
You're absolutely right. And each of my films that I make, I try in a different way to bring out this, the idea of a personal God and a personal enemy. And the incredible fight in our minds. Our minds are the battlefield for the enemy of God. And this latest film that I have just completed, in fact, is just going through its completion this week. I went to India. It's been about 4 years in the making. I went to India to interview the experts on Hinduism and yoga teachers and ask them if the practice of yoga, the physical practice of yoga, can be separated from the spiritual practice of yoga. And they absolutely say no, that it is just for them. They are offended that the West treats Hinduism rather like a recipe, and they say that Hinduism is not like a recipe ingredient that can be extracted from yoga. That Hinduism and yoga are totally synonymous, and in fact Hinduism Today, which is a leading Indian publication, admits that Hinduism is the soul of yoga, and it's based on Hindu scriptures and developed by Hindu sages, and that yoga opens up new and more refined states of mind. And to understand them, one needs to believe in and understand the Hindu way of looking at God. And they warn that a Christian trying to adapt these practices of yoga will likely disrupt their own Christian beliefs. So they understand that there are two different worldviews, that they are opposing worldviews, and yet today we find that Christians are taking yoga, trying to take just the physical practice of yoga, and use it just for physical fitness, not realizing that yoga is designed to open up the mind, to introduce the deities as they see them. They call them deities, but from a biblical point of view, we would see them as fallen angels and demons that are in rebellion to God, and that they seek to come into the bodies of human beings, so that they can use their vocal cords and their hearts and their minds to perpetuate evil behavior that is quite contrary to what God has designed us to do. And
what you're really describing is demonic possession. So many people say, oh, this could never happen. Nobody's ever possessed by a demon. And don't you for 1 minute believe they could not be. Many people are possessed by demons. And if you haven't yet read this wonderful book we carry called Hostage to the Devil by Malachi Martin, let me suggest you read that. This was my first introduction to this concept, and I will tell you it's one of the most gripping books you will ever read. And once you've read it, you'll be able to understand what Carol's talking about. There really are people who are actively possessed by demonic spirits, and of course it has horrible results. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana, and we're simply talking about this concept of demonic possession. And, of course, with so many of the things that have been introduced into our churches and into our schools, and to in every aspect of our society in the name of yoga and meditation and contemplative prayer and walking the labyrinth. And all of these things are opening you up to demonic possession. So pick the story up there, Carol.
Well, I was telling about the adventures of going to India to interview experts on Hinduism. And, of course, we had done this 2 decades ago when we made our movie Gods of the New Age. And we started talking to the practitioners of yoga back then and followed the Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh to his community in Oregon, in Antelope, Oregon. And if you remember that footage of hundreds of orange-clad devotees of Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh involved in these different types of meditation, being completely possessed. And when you saw it on camera and the frightening effects of them opening up their minds, going into these trances, and actually seeing their bodies contort and move, and as they swirled and rotated and fell on the floor, blood coming out of one of their nostrils, and oh, it was just, and screaming. Just that, I remember when we were filming that, being in this huge open sort of building that didn't have sides, had a roof, but the screaming, the pitch of the screaming as these hundreds of people were opening themselves up to being possessed.
That was one of the most gripping pieces of film footage I've ever seen.
It was incredible. And Dr. Stan, you are going to be amazed at some of the footage that is in the film that I'm just in the process of completing called Yoga Uncoiled. And there we go to the practitioners of Hinduism in India, where the Hindu Vishwa Parishad, which is one of the largest missionary organizations in India, admits that Hinduism is giving way to that Christianity has now been taken over by Hinduism, and that their missionaries in the East have become the great missionaries through yoga, that they are sending their teachers to the West to take over through yoga. And it is just amazing seeing hundreds and thousands of these Hindu disciples at the Vishwa Hindu Parishad, the Allahabad Kumbh Mela, and just look at them, and they look very different to people that appear to be spirit-filled in a good and positive way here. I mean, they were naked, covered in ashes, covered in matting their hair, and looking completely completely demented.
Well, because how about a demonic? Would that be a better?
Absolutely. And
demonically,
it's when you actually see all this on camera, where people say that no, this can't possibly happen. But you know, I have been in the middle of demon possessed people, and I know it to be real. I have watched it. In fact, in one of our filming sessions, this fellow came into the tent as we were changing our films in the camera, and we needed a sort of a place away from the sun so that we could change our equipment. This fellow came in with this deep, dark, haunting, terrified voice, and at swords. Here I was at the end of his sword as he was about to pierce his sword through me. And fortunately, by the power, the almighty power of a much greater God, I was able to calm this demented person to, to leave me alone.
Oh, of course, did you get this on film?
No. We were changing our, at that particular point, we were changing our film in the camera, so we couldn't take any film as this was taking place, but I'll tell you, it is absolutely sketched so clearly, etched on my mind. The moment that happened was indeed a scary moment for me. But I have been in the middle. I've been, you know, I've been involved in counseling people that have been in satanic cults and in Hindu cults. And so I have had the opportunity of speaking to people who are demon-possessed and actually speaking to these voices that come out of them and accuse me, want to kill me.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and Carol is simply talking about how she's had the opportunity on many occasions to minister to people who are demonically possessed who would actually threaten to kill her. And of course we have 4 tape sets with other people who are really in these deliverance ministries. People laugh at it. There's no such thing. Yes, there is today. Unless you understand that there really is another dimension, there really are demonic spirits, there really are people who worship Lucifer, who hate Christianity, and of course they're doing everything they can today to destroy and discredit Christianity right here in America. And of course when we see the witchcraft being even taught in our schools with the writings of Harry Potter, this is applied witchcraft 101. And yet this is be allowed in our schools. But we would never dare allow mention of the word of the name of Jesus Christ or have a prayer in our schools. Go ahead, Carol.
Yes, it is. It's amazing. And I think one of the insidious things about, when Satanism or the cults are very obvious, people recognize them. But when they're sugar-coated and cleaned up and called scientific or child-friendly, and can come into our schools, it's absolutely awful. I was talking about this huge, great Indian, this Hindu festival called the Kumbh Mela, and how some years ago I was present at that, and it's organized by an India's Vishva Hindu Parishad, which is probably the world's largest missionary organization, and The Kumbh Mela that I went to in 1979 in Allahabad, India, there was actually the Second World Congress on Hinduism. There were about probably 60,000 delegates from around the world that were speaking at that. And one of the speakers said that our mission in the West has been crowned with fantastic success. Hinduism is becoming the dominant world religion, and the end of Christianity has come near. And in this film that I'm just finishing, called Yoga Uncoiled, we show how yoga teachers in the West have become the leading missionaries of Hinduism, and there are probably about 70,000 of them in America today, in more than 20,000 locations, teaching probably an estimated 35 to 40 million fitness fanatics. And
this is Dr. Stan, and Carol is basically saying that they're teaching, there's 70,000 missionaries here from the Hindu countries, and they're teaching 30 to 40 million people in these new programs.
Yes, I mean 30 to 40 million Americans are taking yoga across this nation. And what they don't understand is the yoga teachers are basically the leading missionaries of Hinduism, because Hinduism and yoga have been repackaged as a fitness exercise. People don't understand that when they go into the gyms, when they go into the YMCAs, when they go into bars or schools and are taking yoga, that they don't understand that they are being indoctrinated into Eastern mysticism, a mind-changing program. It's not physical exercise. If you want to do physical exercise, you do not sit down in a lotus position and have your mind changed. You go out and you sweat out on a soccer field or in a swimming pool or on the tennis courts. And if you want to do physical exercise, then do radical physical exercise. But yoga specifically teaches to have your mind change. These exercise programs are presented, they offer themselves as stress reduction or burnout reduction or concentration benefit programs. This is not exercise. Yes, there's some stretching involved, and yes, there's a little bit of sort of rolling around, but it's not physical exercise. So what's happening is yoga is basically experiencing a renaissance worldwide, and it's probably about a $27 billion industry. And here this new type of Eastern mysticism is coming into our gyms and health exercises, health clinics, health studios across the nation, offering stress benefits, and it's promoted in hospital programs as an alternative medical therapy. It claims to reduce blood pressure and benefit the heart, and it is a new type of mental conditioning, now once again being made child-friendly, just like witchcraft was made child-friendly and introduced into the school system through Harry Potter books. So today, we have this new type of yoga being made child-friendly in 100 schools across the nation in 26 states. It's being called Gerber's Yoga Ed Program, and children are being taught it, and it is being promoted as bringing in good benefits for young children, that they can, that they have better behavior and better grades if they do this program. And at a time when public schools, there's no religion, that religion should not be taught in schools, and if they've kicked out Christianity, then also the practice of yoga should not be in public schools. So it's just everything is changing its language, it's changing its presentation, but basically the bottom line is to condition our minds, to get us into a relationship with supernatural beings out there that are changing us and ultimately preparing us for the world leader, the Antichrist, that is going to come in and rule the world. And there's this sort of huge global conditioning process going on that so many people just don't understand. And it's interesting that it's not only coming in through school programs or fitness programs or but it's also coming through the church, and it's being called, this sort of new Eastern mysticism is being called contemplative prayer or centering techniques. And what it does is it gets Christians into a place where they're not meditating on the Bible, they're not meditating on the opinion of God, they're relating to spiritual experiences and feelings, and having their mind emptied to be able to bring in these sort of feel-good ideas that certainly are changing the psyche of the practitioners. I mean, I don't doubt for a moment that these young school kids that are being involved, there's this school program that's been going on now for about 6 years, a six-year-old yoga program that is being promoted as helping distracted children to focus. They're saying that if your children have ADD and focusing issues, that this type of yoga is very important to help children focus and improve their behavior. So here, once again, a spiritual exercise is coming into the schools to change our children's spiritual, mental, spiritual being, to make them more docile or more easily pliable to to a controlling method that is going to ultimately be able to come in some global capacity to change the minds of people and make them docile and prepare them for becoming world leader. And, you know, interestingly, of course, we see the same ecumenical program coming through Islam. You know, not very long ago, there was the official Iranian radio that started broadcasting these lengthy theories on the imminent appearance of their messianic figure, who it was believed would defeat Islam's enemies, and which, of course, are the Christians and the Jews. And here, there was this, you know, the entire world is going to have this Islamic Shiite rule, and the Muslims are waiting for their 12th Imam, or Mahdi, to come in, and this Mahdi will appear suddenly in Mecca. And interestingly, the Iranian president expects both Jesus and the Mahdi to return and wipe away repression. So we've got the Muslims waiting for the Messiah, we've got Christians waiting for their sort of coming Messiah.
The return of Christ, and of course the Jews are waiting for the Messiah, and the Hindu is waiting for Maitreya. So.
That's exactly it. And so there's this huge conditioning process that's going on, and so many people are just deceived and blind and don't understand that in order for this world being to, this being to come in, there's got to be a conditioning process, and the conditioning process is being done through mind-altering techniques, bringing in spiritual entities into very, very young kids through all sorts of methods and means. And one of them is yoga, which is what my new film is going to be about. And I think you will be absolutely amazed when you look at a Christian yoga teacher that I interviewed in this, who starts talking about how she has completely turned around Christian yoga, or the practice of Eastern mysticism, and calling it Christian yoga. It is the most incredible interview. It'll be an amazing film. I truly believe it's the best documentary that I've had the privilege of making, and I've made about, over 53 documentaries in the last couple of decades, and I think this one is going to be the most powerful.
When are we going to have it available?
Well, I'm going to send you your free complimentary director's copy next week, Dr. Stein.
Right,
you are going to see it.
Well, we'll look forward to it, and certainly we'll carry that, and we'll do everything we can to help you get this material disseminated across America, because I think you're certainly, we're very fortunate to have you and your talent trying to utilize video to educate the people. But before we go on, I want you to get out your webpage. I want you to get out the information on how people can get your material. We do carry a great deal of Carol's material, and we'll probably be carrying more, but I want you to know how to get in touch with her material and with her webpage. So what can you tell them?
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Well, they can go on to my www.caryl, I spell my name Caryl, TV, like television, .com. And if they'd like to even make pre-orders, pre-sales for the Yoga Uncoiled video, I will be very, very happy to take any pre-sale orders. Or they can phone me at 951-301-1101.
Get it up one more time, please.
951-301-1101. A lot of ones and a lot of zeros. 301-1101.
The thing is that the average American finds it so difficult to believe that this could be in our churches, yet it is. It's called the emerging church. And what we want is for Christians to have an experience. Not to study Christianity, the Word of God, nor to experience Christianity. And we're looking for that Christian experience. And, of course, what we're really doing is opening ourselves up to demonic possession. And the same thing, of course, really is true in every aspect of life. It's in our schools. Certainly it's in our movies, it's everywhere we look. And the target is the mind of the American people, altering our perception of reality. They're doing a tremendous job about it. And the big problem is it is taking place because Christians do not understand the spiritual warfare that we're engaged in. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Dr. Stern. I agree with much of what you say, and it's just, I'm amazed that here you are, always working hard, opening up people's minds, and it still amazes me that people are deceived and can't see. You know, it's a spiritual blindness. That's what's so incredible. A spiritual blindness clouds the minds of so many so that they cannot see the biblical reality. And I have seen the reality of demonic beings, spiritual beings. I've grown up in India, and it's very prevalent and it's very accepted. And, you know, one sees it in, I mean, my daily living, my going to school and living in India, one could see spiritual apparitions and signs and wonders in a way, and incredible powers that came with these things when you gave yourself over to them. And here we've got young kids in through the Harry Potter series that want to be like their little hero, Harry Potter, and they want to be able to do the things that Harry Potter can do, the magic that Harry can do. And Harry says, just concentrate. Concentrate on what you want, and it'll happen. And here he specifically teaches young children how to be able to train their minds and be able to think in a different way. And Harry, of course, lives in this world of supernaturalism, in the so-called imaginary school of Hogwarts, school of witchcraft and wizardry, where there are ghosts that live with them, and animals and beings that change into from humans to animals and animals to humans. So there is every aspect of the supernatural world is illustrated in a child-friendly way so that children can see the supernatural through the eyes of Harry. But it looks exciting, and it's a power that Harry has and is able to work and overcome difficulties with, and so they want it. So here it is being shown in the books and, of course, in movies, as you mentioned. I made a film called Gods of Entertainment, where we show the occultism that is prevalent through special effects and the incredible ability of the movie world to be able to make fantasy into reality and capture the imaginations of young children through video games, through the internet, through movies. And so their minds are continually being excited and fascinated by the occult world, which is made to look good if they stay within the white realm of it. And of course, it's also meant to look fearful if you go to the dark side, but they're being told that they can control not going into the dark side, whereas in the world of Harry Potter, you know, you can see that there are dangers in that dark side, and J.K. Rowling, the author, says that each book is darker and darker, and she's going to be coming out with book number 7 in July, and of course Warner Brothers is coming out with film number 5 based on book number 5 in July. So here we have this barrage of more child-friendly witchcraft. And then you've got the hero of Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, who has been playing the role of Harry Potter, who just in a couple of weeks is going to be on the theatre in the West End, on the stage in the West End, appearing nude and naked in an erotic scene with a horse. So here this young 17-year-old boy who millions of children all over the world see as their hero is getting into this sort of perverse child pornography, and kids are just being bombarded with sort of desensitization of morality, desensitization of occultism, and not being able to know what is right and what is wrong. It's a very, very scary world for young children, I think.
Well, I think they've targeted the minds of our children, and they're doing such a good job through the miracle of video and through the miracle of film. And the average parent doesn't have any idea that this is not simply fun and games. They're really gambling with the souls of their children, because that's what this is really all about. And you know, I was just thinking, Carol, looking back 30 years, you know, when I was getting started in my study, I had no idea that there was this other realm out there, that there was another dimension. The idea of the true supernatural was so far from my mind, because after all, I lived in a materialistic world. And it really wasn't until the early 1980s I began to realize that there is this other dimension, there is this other other place out there that where so much of this spiritual battle is being fought. And, you know, until people understand that the purpose of witchcraft is to be able to reach the beings from the other dimension, and they really are able to do that. That's the frightening thing. They're in communion with them. They think that their good spirits are going to help them, but of course they're not good spirits. They will tell you, well, they're white witches and black witches. No, they're all black witches. They're only shades of gray. And of course, they are dabbling with things they have no idea about, and will very well cost them their eternal souls. We'll be back here in just a moment here with Carol Matriciana, and of course her new film is going to be on yoga. I can hardly wait to see it. Well, Carol, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, Dr. Stan, I just would encourage all your viewers to keep in touch with everything you do, listen to you regularly, go into your shop, buy your product, and please come and visit my webpage, www.carryltv.com, and learn and become enlightened to discern, learn about the times we live in, discern the times we live in. These are treacherous times, and we need to be completely as wise as serpents and gentle as doves in these days when our minds are being clouded, whether it's through Islam, the invasion of Islam in America, in fact, that's going to be my next film after this one on yoga, but just to be able to see what is taking place and how they are targeting our young children is very scary indeed. And I thank you so much for what you are doing in alerting and waking up the American public to the dangers in all sorts of realms, in the health realm, in the physical realm, in the spiritual realm. I thank you very, very much.
Well, I think we're really very, very privileged to have the opportunity to have a voice in time like this.
Mm-hmm.
And to know that we have people all throughout the world who are listening to our programs. In fact, it's sort of an awesome responsibility. Because, of course, I feel that I have to present, you know, a reflection of what we would hope that a Christian should. And, of course, being a fallible human being, sometimes when we'll have somebody come on, it'll be very rude and do everything you can to get us antagonized and not to respond, you know, as you ordinarily would anticipate. But, of course, to try to make people understand that Christians are different. And, of course, this is not because we're different on our own, but only because of our reliance on our Lord. And hopefully we can have some impact on people, and hopefully some of our listeners will come to know the Lord. That's my hope and purpose, because I'm certainly not here to entertain. I'm here to make people understand we're involved in a spiritual battle.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly better find out which side of that battle they're on, because there's no neutral position there. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's the reason I make each of my films, and every one of them I try and take the opportunity of showing the difference between the two sides. The side that Jesus Christ has come to set us free from sin. He is our Savior. He wants us to have a time with Him in eternity. And then the other side, His rebellious fallen angels that want to dupe us.
Hold on for just 30 seconds here, and I'll let you finish the thought here. Well, Carol was simply talking about this battle that exists, and there really are two sides. There's certainly the sides of Christianity, and then the sides of the demons and the fallen angels, and you're going to have to decide which side you're on, because there is no neutral position here. Why don't you finish your thought there, Carol?
Exactly. There just absolutely isn't. You know, Jesus Christ himself came to set us free from this absolutely awful condition that we are caught in, the condition of sin, and we can either give our lives to Christ, who has set us free from that, or we can attempt to set ourselves free through all sorts of human methods and ideologies and philosophies and mind-bending and mind-twisting remedies, which I'm afraid will absolutely lead nowhere. And I can tell you, because I was involved in the dark side and have certainly seen both sides of the supernatural world, and I thank my Lord Jesus Christ every day for setting me free from the dark side.
God bless you. Good night, Carol, and we'll look forward to having you on again sometime
real soon. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, certainly Carol Matrisian is one of my favorite guests. We always enjoy having her with us here, and I hope you'll heed what she has to say. She's come from the other side. She realizes this supernatural power is not imaginary, it is real. But you do not want to even think about tapping into it. Oh, you may get a great wealth, you may get great pleasure, you may get all sorts of advantages and recognition. But you'll pay for what you gain here with your eternal soul. So, understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. We do hope that many of you will go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and we do carry a number of Carol's videos and or DVDs, and we actually in the past have carried some of Carol's books. We'll have to check and see if we still have them. We do have a wonderful book. It's called The Beautiful Side of Evil. It's written by Johanna Michelson, who is a medium, who is actually being trained as a psychic healer until she suddenly found this was all demonic. That's The Beautiful Side of Evil, and then our four tapes set on the supernatural with my interviews with Johanna Michelson. You certainly want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which begins to put this into a geopolitical perspective. You'll certainly want to get Malachi Martin's book, Hostage to the Devil, the story of five exorcisms which were certified by the Catholic Church. And I will tell you, when you read that book, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. We also recommend that people will get the four-tape set we have, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. You get them together, the book and the four-tape set, that certainly reduce consideration. We do hope that, of course, many of you will get the videos we carry. They sold their souls for rock and roll, pointing out how these influences are in the music business and the music industry. If you've not yet seen The Da Vinci Con, put out by our good friend Pastor Joe Schimmel, who put out the DVDs They Sold Their Soul, The Da Vinci Con goes into what Hollywood is doing and the influence of day, 4 hours a day on shortwave, where of course you can listen to our programs 9 hours a day on Telstar 5 satellite. We don't expect you to do it. We hope that you're going to tell others about our programs, but listen when you can. Get educated. And, of course, get the material we talk about. Pull down our web, pull down our newsletters. Read them, save them, study them, and then pray for America. Pray for revival, but please pray for Radio Liberty, because we're on the front lines of this spiritual battle. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.